I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of...
How do they keep getting it right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Yes, giddy up. It is indeed trivia time here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. My name's Jasper. I'm one of your two co-hosts. Joining me is my brother and the other co-host, Harley.
How's it doing today?
Good. I was just going to leave a really big gap there to see whether you jump in or whether people would get confused. Or Do you think they were confused?
No, I don't think so.
I hope so.
We might have like contractual disputes like in a late series of a comedy show, and then you say, I'm my co-host, and you've just inexplicably got another brother, and we don't ever...
My co-host? Karim! My co-host? Abdullah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move away from that. I've actually got some breaking news to do with this show that you haven't even been informed of. It's live on air. We're getting your reaction.
Some
sort of YouTube unboxing video.
Yeah.
That the producers of this show, you're aware of this team, made it... A maths error from last week, and they counted the scores wrong.
Oh, we did?
And it should have been... No, we. Don't you dare put us in this, okay? I was sitting backstage with my mug of hot cocoa and my bathrobe by this point, with a cucumber on my eyes, and Shelley, the junior producer on this show, who makes $20 a week, came in and said... Mr. Bruce, and she calls me that. She came in and said, Mr. Bruce, you've counted wrong. And I said, whoa, Shelley. You? I think you mean you. And Shelley made an error. And it's, again, part of the pro-Harley conspiracy that runs this place. I go backstage and I wonder why people dislike me so much. Shelley.
Mr. Bruce.
Well, it's Mr. Bruce versus Harley. Those are the two camps. I'm starting to think that everyone likes Harley more than they like Mr. Bruce. And I noticed that Shelley made an error and gave you one too many points. So last week's episode should indeed have been a draw.
Oh, geez.
It shouldn't have been a Harley victory at all. So as everyone has been suspecting all along, we found out that Trivia Champ versus Trivia Champ is rigged. Shelley's since been fired. She's gone back to busking on the streets with her recorder. I walked past the other day. It sounded terrible. So that's just... Anyway, that's just a little update. I think it's like in professional sport. You know, when the score's in, you can't walk it back. So we're just going to have to live with the consequences.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm as disappointed as anyone.
Well, do you want me to start today with a deficit of...
No, I think we should just, next time, not hire recorder buskers off the street to be the producers on this... nationally acclaimed podcast.
Nationally,
you know, what will our two German listeners think of this kerfuffle? I think they'll be distraught, if anything.
Shout out to Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah, absolutely. Hansel and Gretel, they're both going well. Do you have a fun fact to kick us off?
In
memoriam of Shelley, the recorder producer.
Well, I mean, in the vein of her being such a talented musician, I've got a music fact.
What is it?
When you think of like official rock band merch, what kind of things do you think about?
I think about like the Nirvana shirt, probably.
Yeah, shirts. Yeah, hoodies.
Probably posters, maybe. Yeah. Things like that, yeah.
Okay, what world touring rock band has got an official casket?
An official casket you can buy.
Buried in, and you can buy. And this band's even donated it to people who have passed.
Who? I'm going to guess.
Okay.
It's going to be like a rock band, like a heavy rock band, I reckon. Maybe something like a Metallica. I'm going to guess Metallica.
Okay, well, it's not Metallica. I'll give you another guess, though, and I'll tell you that it's alliterative.
Mm.
And casket is actually spelled with a K.
Oh. How's Cannibal Corpse spelled? Is that the case?
Cannibal Corpse.
I mean, that'd be fitting.
No.
K. I can't.
No. You can buy, emblazoned with the faces of the members, a Kiss casket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Kisket.
It's called the Kiss Casket.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Who's getting that, do you think?
There's
got to be fans out there that have. Because their fans are probably getting a bit older now. So, ipso facto, order online while stocks last.
Someone probably bought it as an investment knowing this day was coming.
Yeah.
No, Dimebag Darrell, who's a guitarist.
From Pantera, right? Was Dimebag Darrell from Pantera?
Yeah. The one he was gunned down on stage.
Yeah.
He Gene Simmons personally donated a Kiss casket, which was used for him.
Oh, Gene, you shouldn't have. Just what he always wanted.
Anyway.
Well, that's, I'm not going to be able to top that. That's really good. My fun fact is that it's also music, R.I.P. Shelley. Yeah. It's that my fun fact is that the band Kings of Leon is named for their grandfather, whose name was Leon. So it's comprised of this family members. I think it's brothers and cousins in the band.
Okay.
And Kings of Leon was their grandfather they had in common.
Right.
There so you for go. Us, it'd be Kings of Alan.
Kings of Alan.
Or Kings of John. I think Kings of John's better.
Kings of John.
Kings of Johnny. Kings of Jono.
Yeah. I don't know. If, better. I don't know if Pa would like being called Jono or Johnny.
Kings of Alan.
Kings of Alan.
It does sound like a Kings of Leon tribute act.
It does.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Anyway, speaking of tributes, this episode will be dedicated to Shelley, our ousted junior producer, overthrown by a coup during the week. So, Shelley, let's get into the rules. This one's for you.
Harley and Jasper have nominated three special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The three special subject round will feature five questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
So those are the rules of engagement for today's episode, and indeed any future episode, as long as I'm in charge, which we've made it abundantly clear I am. What am I hearing questions about today, Harley?
You're hearing about kings and queens.
Okay.
Hey, I'm walking here.
Yeah.
Not going to do the voice.
Oh.
And?
Let's try. Let's just try. Let's try.
Yeah, I'm walking here.
That was good. Okay. That was excellent.
Thank
From
you.
From going forward, let's do it. I reckon we do it like that.
No.
No?
And finally, drop it.
Okay, and
which is kind of apt because I want you to drop the suggestion I should do that voice.
Okay, yeah, sure. Your categories that you're hearing about today are Kind of You, Alphabet Soup, and Noteworthy. So why don't you kick us off in round number one, Harley?
Okay.
Round one.
Kings and Queens. Actor Steve McQueen was offered the lead male role in what 1961 Academy Award-winning rom-com?
Ooh, 1961 rom-com.
Yep.
It's a like the lead role?
Yeah, this is not the only rom-com question we got as well.
Wow. Okay, yeah. I do love a rom-com.
The lead male role.
Yeah. What about, what's a really, oh, All About Eve is quite a famous rom-com. I reckon that's quite old-timey. Maybe that's even a bit older than that. 1961, or could it be Breakfast at Tiffany's maybe? That's kind of a rom-com. I mean, there is a male lead in, like, I haven't seen the movie, I read the book, but cultured in that way. and there's Holly Golightly is the main lady, and I think that was 1960s, I reckon. I reckon the book was, like, written in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Absolutely correct, and you're right, books in the 50s.
Yeah, actually based on a song by Deep Blue Something, I think. It was the original.
Right.
You know the song?
No.
It's like, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I'm going to guess that came out after all of
it. Oh, no, definitely. I think it was like 90s dude rock sort of era.
I sensed a joke.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that meant. But yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Breakfast at Tiffany's. He actually wanted to take it, but was unable due to commitments in Wanted Dead or Alive.
Oh, that sounds pretty good as well.
Also turned down roles, Steve McQueen, in heaps of films. He's got to be in Ocean's 11.
Ooh.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. We're talking the old Ocean's 11. Yeah, we're not talking about like George Clooney when he was like 20 years dead.
That's fair.
Apocalypse Now.
Ooh. Was he going to be Colonel Kurtz?
Presumably? I don't know. Presumably, yeah.
Yeah.
Dirty Harry. Because I think Kurtz was played by Marlon Brando.
It was, yeah. Friend of the show. Friend of the show, Marlon Brando.
And Marlon Brando, his career was on a bit of a dive at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was a kind of a role that brought him back a little bit. But yeah. Yeah.
A Bridge Too Far he was going to be in.
Oh, okay.
And another film that's been mentioned. I don't know if it was in pre-production episodes that we didn't release, but Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah. Wow, okay. So that's a lot of things.
A lot of films he turned down.
Yeah, what was he doing? Too busy.
I don't know. Yeah. But I wrote a list of films he turned down. I didn't write any that he was actually in.
He's too busy being a friend of our show.
Yeah.
Full-time job for him.
Good on you, Steve.
What's your favourite rom-com? Do you have one?
I don't think I would share that publicly.
Why not?
No, I'm kidding. It would be an Adam Sandler one, that's for sure.
I guess those count as rom-coms.
Anger Management, maybe?
Would you call that a rom-com? I mean, I guess he's married in it.
It's kind of any comedy movie where there's any sprinkle of romance?
Rom-com.
Rom-com.
Okay, that's fair.
What about you?
I watched The Holiday recently. That was pretty good.
With Adam Sandler?
No, The Holiday. No, yeah, it's got Jack Black's in it.
Okay.
Jack Black is a romantic role. Wow. It's quite good, yeah. He's it's
Shallow Hal as well.
Yeah, well, that's is it a rom-com? I mean, it's a bit of a dude movie, that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very good, okay.
What is your favourite? Is it the whole
Well, probably not number one favourite. I did like Notting Hill. It was a good one. There's Something About Mary. Again, it's kind of a rom-com, more for the guys than for the girls, that one.
There's Something About Mary?
Yeah.
No, I think that's for everyone.
Do you think so?
Great movie.
Children? Yeah. They might like it.
They might like it. I don't know about
the... I don't think they'll get it, but...
The nude, like the old woman boobs.
Are there old woman boobs in that one?
Yeah, he's looking through the binoculars.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Okay, anyway.
Let's move on, yeah.
Okay. We're not talking about King Charles here. We're talking about Charlie King. He played 6 professional games. Was it a VFL, Sheffield Shield, or New South Wales Rugby League?
Charlie King.
Charlie King, yeah.
He's how many games? 6 games.
6 games.
All up? Yeah. Whole career?
And he's been dead for a while.
Okay.
you're not going to remember when this
person was playing. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I had this guy's footy card. Stats, games, 6. Whoa.
Sheffield Shield's a choice. It's not necessarily a footy card.
Yeah, true. It could be a cricket card. Do they wear the cricket cards? I guess they probably were. So. We didn't have them growing up.
No. Where would you get cricket cards?
The rubbish bin. No, I don't know. I'm gonna guess that he was... I mean, I really have nothing to say. I'm going to say he was a VFL player, because that goes back a really long time. Going VFL.
Absolutely correct. Oh, fantastic. He played 6 games for Geelong in the VFL.
Oh, wow. When?
It was like the 1940s, I think. I'll look it up.
Charlie. Busy, eh?
Yeah. And I guess I can't really say that they were professional games, because that would have been before the professional era.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. But I mean, it's still top levels. First senior games, as it would be called in AFL, but top flight, top level.
Top level, yeah. In 1949, he played 6 games, 0 goals.
Oh, Charlie. Lift it up, mate.
Yeah. Okay.
More games than I've played.
So, what is the significance of the number 95? Emblazoned on cultural sensation and one of the coolest film characters of all time, Lightning McQueen.
A bit of editorializing from you there.
Coolest
film character of all time. Is that objective, is it?
That's pretty objective. Yeah. Ka-chow.
95. Oh, I reckon I know what this is, actually.
What is it?
Okay, well, because Cars is a Disney Pixar movie.
Yeah.
1995 was when the first Disney Pixar movie, Toy Story, came out. I reckon I could be onto something here. I'm going to say that stuff I just said is the answer.
Absolutely correct. Oh, yeah, that's
sweet.
Toy Story, Pixar's first film, came out in 1995. It was originally going to be number 57 on him, which is the birth year of John Lasseter, sort of a senior creative at Pixar.
Yeah, he's been embroiled in the Me Too movement, that bloke.
Has he?
Not in a good way. Not in a good way. Protesting way. In a protesting about you way.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I'm not going to say any more in case John listens. One of our many celebrity friends from the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're really off to a guns a blazing, all cylinders start, and this,
pew, pew.
You know, like the round, those were the hard questions. So, the sole Academy Award win for King Richard was soured when the best actor delivered a crisp slap to the face of which comedian who was presenting the award for best documentary feature.
It was a crisp slap, I will say. It was pretty fresh. Do you remember watching this at the time?
No, I remember like people texting it to me. Like,
yeah,
it might be one of those things where, like, where were you?
Yeah.
when Slapgate happened.
You were in Brisbane with COVID.
I was with COVID. Yeah,
I remember. We were in Brisbane.
COVID and me hanging out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Would you rather be slapped by Will Smith or slapped by COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, in your face?
Probably Will Smith, because it would be a funny story and potentially a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'd be like, can't sue COVID.
You do this so much. Love slapping. I know that he slapped Chris Rock.
Absolutely correct. For the event known as The Slappening, Will Smith received a 10-year ban from all Academy Award events.
Really? Wow. Yeah. So when's he going to be able to come back?
Like 2031, I guess. Or yeah. Was it 21? No, it was 22. 2032.
I think it was the start of 2022, yeah.
Yeah, so it was the 2021 awards which were presented in.
He won Best Actor, though.
He did, yeah. Can't take that away from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Try cancel him now.
Do you reckon he's eaten the chocolate?
What?
Like, chocolate. Do you reckon he's like unwrapped his Oscar and eating all the chocolate inside it?
Is there chocolate inside Oscars?
I'm pretty sure.
Why are there teeth marks on your Oscar, Meryl Streep? I thought there was chocolate inside.
Okay. 4 from 4 in so far.
Mm.
Final question. What Queen single, the last of the 1970s, was also their first to chart number one in the Billboard Hot 100s?
Last single of the 1970s?
The last one that Queen released to the 70s also their first.
Something in 1979, where he was. What is that early sort of stuff? I mean, I think, like I always say, if you don't know the answer and you don't guess the most obvious, you do feel a bit silly sometimes. So I'm wondering whether Bohemian Rhapsody might be the best choice. I'm not sure if that was 1979. Look, I really don't know. We Will Rock You, perhaps, or like a... I think, like, when I think Queen, sometimes I do think that sort of 80s, like, hyper sort of, like, energetic, almost hair metal vibe sometimes that they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of their more... Oh, maybe something like Another One Bites the Dust. That's kind of quite timeless. And yeah, I'm going to say Another One Bites the Dust.
It's Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Oh, sure, okay.
Which, it's kind of funny that to get their first number one hit, they had to write a song like it was 20 years old.
Yeah. Very true, actually. Because a lot of people like misremember that song as being by Elvis. Or like people go, oh yeah, but like...
Yeah, yeah.
Not us.
Not us, idiots. No. But, not learned folk.
Yeah, yeah. Learned. It's pronounced learned.
Okay. No more Simpsons references. 4 out of 5 for the round.
Fantastic.
Very valiant effort.
Fantastic. Harley, your first category is kind of you.
Excellent. Ready?
Okay, question one. In 2023, the Australian government announced up to 280 people from which island nation would be permitted to migrate to Australia each year as part of the country's efforts to assist on climate change?
So it's an island nation that's sinking.
Mm-hmm.
From memory, like Palau, Tuvalu, Micronesia are all the ones that are kind of very low-lying.
Yeah.
I'm going to say... I don't think it's... I think maybe... I'm gonna say Kiribati.
Okay.
Because Kiribati, I'm pretty sure, is like an atoll just about.
Mm, Kiribati is a lot of different like coral atolls. Another friend of the show, the nation of Kiribati.
Yeah, yeah.
It's come up a few times.
I'm gonna go with Kiribati.
It's actually, it was one you mentioned. It's actually Tuvalu, which is a low-lying country comprising 9 islands in the Central Pacific, and it's home to about 11,200 people. So in return for this exchange program, Tuvalu has to mutually agree with Australia if it wants to strike up a deal with any other country on security and defense-related matters.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We all know what that's about.
We
know what they're playing there. So hypothetically, I did the maths on it. 11,200 people, if 280 were coming to Australia each year, in 40 years, Tuvalu would be empty, and Australia and Tuvalu would be the one country.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all the Tuvaluans? I think Tuvaluans would be here.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Do you reckon it'll have like a portmanteau name?
Tuvalia. Ooh, I like that. It's better than Austra Tuvalu.
Austra Tuvalu.
Don't mind Austra Tuvalu.
Yeah. Austra Tuvalu sounds like the scientific name for like a bird.
Yeah, definitely.
Like lorikeet Austra Tuvalu.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, question two. The iconic final line of A Streetcar Named Desire, as uttered by tragic heroine Blanche DuBois, is, "Whoever you are, I have always depended on the kindness of whom?"
Okay.
I know Theater. You said no. I know you said no more Simpsons references, but I think there might be one coming here.
Theater is not really a strong point of mine, even when it has featured in The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I've always relied on the kindness of you. Sounds like a really logical thing to say.
Okay.
But if it was you, I feel like it wouldn't be trivia.
Yeah.
Yep. God also seems like a very logical thing, but tragic heroine. I don't know. I feel like it's a bit racy.
Is there a Simpsons parody of this that you can maybe pinpoint?
Not off the top of my head.
Really?
Not under the spotlights of the producers watching.
True, with Shelley watching from afar with her recorder tooting away.
Always, whoever you are, what was the quote again?
It is, whoever you are, I have always depended on the kindness of someone.
Of, I'm just going to say, I'm going to say God, but it does not sound right.
It's the kindness of strangers. You know, in the Simpsons parody, like, you can always depend on the kindness of strangers. The Simpsons musical of it? No?
No, oh, okay. I don't remember that.
I thought you know that. That's my bad. Maybe a little bit tricky, that one. There literally was a streetcar named Desire, which is in a neighborhood in New Orleans called Desire. The name refers to an exchange in a play between Blanche and her sister, Stella.
Yep, Stella, yeah.
About that streetcar, but it also kind of refers to the thematic concerns of the play around desire and how our desires can thwart us.
I'll have to do more reading into it if it's going to show up on Trivia Nights.
Yeah, well, I think at the moment we desire to get onto question 3 in kind of you. All right. At number 31, Miles Davis's 1959 album Kind of Blue was the highest ranked jazz record to appear on the most recent edition of Rolling Stone's 500 Best Albums of All Time list, released in 2023. Name any 3 albums that polled higher on that list.
Above 30. Wow, so you've got like 30 albums typed there.
I've got an article up on my computer.
Oh, okay.
That is going to show me all of them. So there are 30. You've got to name 3.
I have to name 3 of
them. 3 of the 30.
From how many guesses? From 3?
I'll give you 4 guesses.
4 guesses, okay.
These are the greatest albums of all time. So hopefully you've heard of some of them.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I reckon AC/DC Back in Black is quite likely to be up there.
Okay.
The
Wiggles, Big Red Car.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I've said too much.
Never Mind Nirvana, I think will probably be there.
Okay.
Michael Jackson Thriller, I think would be pretty hard for them to not, you know, not miss out on political reasons, you know.
Okay.
yeah,
true. But it was cancelled.
Yeah. and, I mean, Taylor Swift Red, perhaps? Yeah? No. Oh, that was a joke.
I mean,
laugh! trying to think. So, I feel like I got 3 pretty solid guesses.
You got 1 more guess.
Only
got 1 shot.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is my 3rd guess. Is my 4th guess, sorry.
Okay. You're getting the points here. Okay, well done. Cool. So 3 of those 4 albums are on the top 500. Got to say, when you started with AC/DC, I was a little bit worried about how you were going to go, but the other 3 are all on it.
So, Back in Black's not. Is Highway to Hell?
None of the others are higher than Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, would you believe? Thriller comes in at number 12.
Okay.
Nevermind by Nirvana comes in at number 6.
Yep.
And Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band comes in at number 24.
What's number 1?
The number 1 album is What's Going On by Marvin Gaye.
Okay.
So the... You could have had any of these 30 albums. Strap in. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, Blue by Joni Mitchell, Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder, Abbey Road by the Beatles, Nevermind by Nirvana, Rumours by Fleetwood Mac, Purple Rain by Prince, Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill by Lauryn Hill, Revolver by the Beatles, Thriller by Michael Jackson, I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You by Jasper Bruce, just kidding, Aretha Franklin, Exile on Main Street by the Rolling Stones, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back by Public Enemy, London Calling by The Clash. Should I keep going or should I just put him in the... In the chat.
Yeah, I can just put them in the show.
My
notes.
Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye West. Highway 61 Revisited by Bob Dylan. To Pimp a Butterfly by Kendrick Lamar. Kid A by Radiohead. Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. Ready to Die, the remaster by the Notorious B.I.G. The Velvet Underground, Nico by The Velvet Underground. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Tapestry by Carole King. Horse by Patti Smith. End of the Wu-Tang Clan by Wu-Tang Clan. Voodoo by D'Angelo. Never heard of that one.
No.
That's the only one I've ever heard of. The Beatles by The Beatles, which otherwise known as The White Album. And Are You Experienced by Jimi Hendrix. In retrospect, probably not the most interesting question because I just had to list 30 albums.
Yeah.
How did I go?
You did well.
Was it okay?
Yeah.
Hopefully
it was
nice.
The White Album was another one that crossed my mind. I knew there'd be some Beatles up there.
There's a lot of Beatles. I was going to put a restriction on how many Beatles you could answer because you could have just named 3 Beatles albums because I think there's even more than 3 on there.
Yeah. Revolver White Album. Let's keep on kicking.
Going well. All right. Question 4. Which television host's Be Kind persona unraveled spectacularly in 2020 as workers went public about an alleged toxic workplace environment she had cultivated on set?
Yeah.
The host's eponymous show eventually went off the air after its 19th season in 2022.
Yeah. No, I remember this. I'm pretty sure this was Ellen DeGeneres. We do a lot of waffling. I'm just going to pinpoint Ellen.
It was Ellen DeGeneres. correct. So this kind of all started with a tweet from a comedy writer called Kevin T. Porter. Posted a tweet that essentially asked for mean stories and called Ellen DeGeneres one of the, quote, notoriously one of the meanest people alive. And said that he would donate $2 to Food Bank for any legitimately mean story posted. And he ended up having to donate $600 to an LA food bank because of all the mean stories. Some of them included that staff were required to chew gum before speaking to her because she had a sensitive nose, and that staff lunch orders were policed by Ellen herself, and that no one was allowed to have fish or meat on set because it was too pungent. No, I think it was because maybe too pungent. Or maybe it was because she's a veggie. Either way, pretty weird.
Very weird, yeah.
So that was... You're right, it was Ellen DeGeneres. So well done there. You're on the comeback trail here, heading into the last question in kind of you.
And what am I on? Three?
Two.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Two out of four. Ain't bad.
Yeah.
Don't be sad. Two out of four ain't bad.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, question five. The mellow instrumental track, Children, was released by Italian DJ Robert Miles and would often be played as the last track in DJ sets at Italian nightclubs in the 1990s. This was no accident. Miles wrote the song with a very functional purpose, inspired by a phenomenon that became known as Strage del Sabato Sera. What does this specifically refer to?
Strage.
Strage, S-T-R-A-G-E, del Sabato, S-A-B-A-T-O,
yeah.
Sera, S-E-R-A.
So I don't know what this Strage word is, but Sabato Sera is Saturday night, Saturday evening.
So it was played like as the last song at nightclubs, and there was like a specific like kind reason that it was played in response to something that kept happening.
That makes sense. Yeah, I reckon it's a kind song, and so when they close the nightclub and everything kicked outside, none of them are like all aggressive and wanting to punch on. I reckon that. And Strage could very well be like aggression or like fight or something like that.
Jeez, you're pretty close.
Oh, okay, what is it?
So it's Strage is like massacre. So essentially, Strage del Sabato Sera means Saturday Night Massacre. And essentially, there was a spike in road deaths in the 1990s in Italian nightclubs because people were like all pumped up leaving nightclubs and like either like crashing, like falling asleep at the wheel or like under the influence of substances. And this guy wrote this song that's kind of like, all right, we're winding down now, and it's like an instrumental track. It's still, to be honest, kind of a vibe. Like it's got like this cool little piano hook, and it's still kind of going a little bit. Like I reckon if you're trying to clear the dance floor, just play like Pavarotti or like The Four Seasons. I guess Pavarotti in an Italian nightclub maybe is like a national hero there. But
oh mate, that I would be pumped.
Nessun Dorma.
Yeah, well that'd be a good one. Nessun Dorma without sleep.
Yeah. Oh wow, very good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so essentially it was a song that's like, okay, we've got to start winding down now, get ready to leave.
There you go.
And it's okay. a little bit calmer than some of the music the kids were listening to
back in the day. No, okay. So what am I on? Two out of five.
So at the end of round one, it looks like the new producer, Wayne, who's just come in, we've hired him. He's actually getting paid less than Shelby. He's getting paid $18 a week. He's counted the numbers, and it looks like you're on 2 points, and I'm on 4 points heading into round number two.
Round two.
Alrighty, Holly, remind us what you're asking questions about in round number two.
You're hearing questions about, hey, I'm walking here.
Fantastic.
Excellent. Diving into it to start off with. In what two decades did the TV series Walker, Texas Ranger originally air?
Fantastic. I think this is definitely 80s. I reckon that's one of the decades. So I think it's either 80s, 90s or 70s, 80s. The only thing I know about Walker, Texas Ranger is that in the movie Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby, he names his two sons Walker and Texas Ranger. And Will Ferrell, like for that to be a topical reference for someone of Will Ferrell's age, I reckon it had to have been airing when he was probably a kid into adolescence. So I'm going to say that it's probably like 80s is one of the decades. I'm thinking 70s, 80s is going to be my guess.
Honestly, I thought it was a lot older when I was researching this. It's 90s to 2000s.
Really?
1993 to 2001.
Wow, I've never seen an episode of it. Has it aired in Australia ever, really?
I don't know. I really don't know.
To quote Beyonce, this ain't Texas.
This ain't Texas. I mean, maybe it hasn't. Yeah. you said you don't know anything about it. I'll read you a little bit of a quote from the Wikipedia article. Martial arts were displayed prominently as the primary tool of law enforcement and occasionally as a tool for Walker and company to reach out to the community.
Wow. So he'd go and like fight some guys and go, hey guys, Anyone want to learn how to kickbox?
Yeah, I don't know, but I've never watched an episode of it either. But yeah, a lot newer than I thought it was.
Yeah.
So when Talladega Nights came out, it would have only been stopped making new episodes for like 4 or 5 years.
It's quite contemporary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay.
A topical name. Actually, a smart thing to name your child. Very progressive.
Yeah, very progressive. Texas Ranger is a cool name.
If you had to name your child after a TV show title, what would you name them?
Title.
Yeah. Frasier?
Air Crash and Investigations. Frasier would be all right. Yeah.
Investigations would be a bit more bookish. Air Crash would be the sort of sporty, like rogue kid. Air, he's got a good heart.
Air Crash would get called into the principal's office all the time.
Crashy.
Air Crash Investigations, fun fact, has killed off the most characters of any TV series. Even more than Game of Thrones.
Body count is just, whoa.
Okay, moving on. So Frasier for you, you reckon?
I think Frasier's a good one. Who wants to be a millionaire?
Who wants to be
millionaire for short?
Jeopardy.
Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Jep for short.
Isn't that
Jeb Bush? Isn't that what that's short for?
His name is John Ellis Bush, and it's Jeb.
Oh, okay.
Which are his initials.
Oh, okay. It's just as silly as naming a child Jeopardy, to be honest.
Yeah.
Jeb.
Okay. The line, "Hey, I'm walking here," comes from Midnight Cowboy.
Mm.
The first and only X-rated film to ever win Best Picture.
Hmm.
What year was it released?
I reckon it was in the early 70s. I actually reckon it might be either 1970 or 1971. So my first thought was 1971, because it's got a very young Dustin Hoffman in it, who actually says, "Hey, I'm walking here." And John Voight is the titular cowboy. I think... yeah. 1971 was my first thought. That's what I'm going to go with.
So even a bit earlier than that. 1969.
Wow, okay.
And it's classic trivia, but whether or not the "Hey, I'm walking here" line was improvised is apparently a matter of contention.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I think Dustin Hoffman contends he
came up with it.
Yeah. But apparently, according to a lot of other people on set, that, you know, it was scripted to the point where they had an extra in the cab that nearly hits him.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to be... it was unintentional that he almost did get hit by a cab.
Yeah, apparently there was an extra in the cab.
Oh.
Anyway.
So Dustin Hoffman's just talking mad shit.
It's up for contention. Over 50 years ago at this point.
Yeah. Surely you still remember it if you made that up, though. Like, if you're here... like, you know whether you did or didn't make that line up.
Because
it's such an iconic line. You've thought about it a lot in the years that have happened since. Yeah. Sure. Right?
And then I said, "Hey, I'm walking here." And the producer said, that's won us an Oscar.
Yeah.
Good work, Dustin.
That was the moment. And everyone on set just started applauding.
Yeah.
And went, I have a feeling that every time people come to America and they buy "I Love NY" shirts, they're going to yell this phrase. And I have a funny feeling everyone's going to find it funny every time.
Did he yell it when he went to New York?
I think the first time, yeah. Cool. He went, "Hey, I'm walking here." And sort of stood there, and some American guy hit me with his car.
Okay. Tough break for the first two, you know.
I'm on zero.
You're on zero, yeah. Jeez. I mean, Best Picture winners, winning questions, you know, things about all-time favourite TV shows.
Yeah.
This one might be a bit more up your alley.
Okay.
"Walking on the Sun" was the debut single for what American rock band from their album Fush You Mang?
Fush You Bang. That's the
Fush You Mang.
That's the name of the album.
Yeah.
Just imagine as a band sitting around and going, "Okay, guys, I'm thinking a few options for our, you know, Smash Mouth could be one, you know, going... I don't know, Walking on the Sun, what you call the album?" And then one guy goes, "How about Fush You Mang?" And everyone goes, "Well, that's the best one we've had yet." Excellent. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
I think it is Smash Mouth, the band, though.
Yeah.
If I'm thinking of the right song.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that was their debut single.
Debut single, yeah. You're absolutely correct. And I knew that you knew Smash Mouth better than you knew anything more erudite.
Yeah, correct. The lesson learned. Don't try and improve your education or learn things. Just listen to Smash Mouth.
Yeah. So, okay, I've got two facts for this. Number one, 20 years later, an acoustic remake of the entire Fush You Mang album was released by Smash Mouth.
Wow.
And the track itself is playable on Rock Band 3.
Really?
Mm.
It's like the
one,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fun song.
I mean, you would know. You're a big Smash Mouth fan.
Well, I am. Very, very much so. So good to get off the mark with the help of my friends at Smash Mouth.
Okay. Next question is the next one about a 1960s rom-com as well.
Great.
And keep in mind, what's the topic?
Hey, I'm walking here.
Exactly, yeah. So, what rom-com based at the 1964 Olympics was the final film role for Cary Grant before he retired to focus on raising his daughter?
Wow. Something about walk.
Yeah, I don't think there's a movie you would have heard of. But, you would have heard of this phrase and perhaps the fact that it's a movie, but you wouldn't anecdotally know. I'm giving you a bit of an extra clue.
Okay.
You know, like...
Yeah, I can't say I've heard too much about this. Walk the line. Walking on the moon. Walking in Memphis. Walk.
In terms of pop culture, there's also, I think, a song and an album. There's definitely a song with this by this name. I don't think there's an album, actually. There's a 1980s rock song. Same name.
Walk This Way? Is
Walk This Way 80s?
I think it's I think the Run DMC version is. Walk Along. Walking on Sunshine. I'm going to go with Walking on Sunshine.
That's a really good guess. It's Walk Don't Run.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that as a movie.
Do you know the song, though?
Yeah. I've heard of that. I've definitely heard that song. Yeah.
Sorry, that's why I put in, you know, what the topic is. That's
a tough break for him. So he quit to, just raise his daughter.
Raise his daughter.
Girl dad.
Yeah. That's good. No, Cary Grant and his daughter Jennifer.
Jennifer Grant.
Yeah.
What's she up to these days?
I don't know. But yeah, he full retired. He wanted to be there for his daughter.
Wow.
Peak of his career. Yeah. Wow.
Well, I mean, was it the peak? I've never heard of that movie.
Well, I mean, I think peak-ish of his career.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's going well. Good on you, Cary.
Tough break for you, this set.
Yeah.
Okay. Race walking in the Olympics are held over what two distances as of the last Olympics? I'll give you a point if you get one of them.
Okay. So, it's 1,000 metres and, it's you're looking for the length?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not 1,000
metres.
It's got to be, it's going to be, okay. When people always ask, what Olympic sport could you do? I always say race walking. But then people say it's more technical than what you think.
Oh, yeah.
Because your feet can never leave the ground, I think is one of the
same time,
rules. Yeah, that it's you have to go ball, heel, ball, heel, ball. You have to be quite regimented.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think training looks like for those people?
Going to Maccas.
Do you think they get burnt out? Okay, mate, just day off today. So don't be walking anywhere. Get one of those e-bikes and just ride around, or even shopping trolley if it comes to it. Just don't walk anywhere.
Yeah,
don't want to burn you out, buddy.
Yeah.
Are they fit, the people that do it?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
They're actually fit?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I can't say... I think it's a long way. I'm going to say it's 5 kilometres and 10 kilometres are going to be my guesses.
It's actually 20 kilometres and 50 kilometres.
50 kilometres of walking. Jeez, how long does it take?
I don't know. Was not one of the fun facts that I brought in for the occasion.
You'd be stitched up if it's like, honey, I got a tickets to the Olympics. Oh, what have you got a tickets to? The walking.
They don't just walk around the athletics track.
No, I know, but that's what I mean. You're like... been here all day. They're going to finally get... it is 50 kilometres. They're coming from Parramatta. It's pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from the Blue Mountains, it's pretty far.
Yeah. I just looked it up. The world record for 50 kilometre race walk for men is 3 hours and 32 minutes.
I don't have any grasp on if that's good. Is it? Or presumably 50, it's very good if it's the world record.
Well, for women, it's just under 4 hours.
I can run faster than that.
But, think walking 12 and a half kilometres an hour for 4 hours on end.
Oh, yeah.
14 kilometres an hour.
That's running speed.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
freaky.
Who did it? Does it say?
Liu Hong for the women.
Yeah.
And Johan Diniz for the men.
Johan Diniz.
Yeah. And the Olympic record is actually held by an Aussie.
Wow.
Jared Talent?
Very talented.
Yeah, very talented.
Talented man. Jared, they called him.
So, it was originally in the 1908... Olympics, the London ones. Originally 3,500 meters, so that
was that's not long.
That's not long, no. That's over quickly. That's a stroll, yeah. And a 10 mile distance.
A walk in the park. A walk in the athletics park.
And how's this? There was no women's event until the 1992 Olympics. Just women.
Really?
Women didn't walk at the Olympics.
Wow. Why not?
I don't know. Until Barcelona, you know. It took the very progressive...
Until Barcelona?
Not until Barcelona. Until 1992. 90s.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, they spent like 80 years now. Not a women's... Yeah. That's a men's game, you know?
Like the Olympics chief's like at the shop seeing women walk around and they're like, but chief, look at all the women. Look how they walk so splendidly. And he's going, I can't have it.
Nah, it does. It just wouldn't sell seats, buddy. Okay, really tough break for you on that one. Bit of a leveling around. We've ended up with 1 from 5.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. So you're hearing questions about alphabet soup in round two. Okay, so I've mixed this up a bit. I've asked some questions that are about, like, actually about the alphabet.
Yeah.
And I've asked some that are about different letters.
Okay, I thought you were going to say something about the soup.
I'm not really a massive soup guy, as we know. Yeah, I don't mind pumpkin soup.
Notorious.
I like when...
I wouldn't broadcast your thoughts about soup.
No, okay. So I don't think this is very controversial.
I think it is.
I like when soup is one texture. Pumpkin soup. Great. Like potato and leek soup. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Minestrone or ramen? Not really my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Floaty stuff? I want wet food.
Yeah, I know.
If I wanted wet food, I'd go eat a burger in the rain. You know what I mean?
Get on with it. This is embarrassing.
Okay. Question one. Lending its name to a Californian ghost town, a Swiss brand of watches, a range of fatty acids, and the alias of Canadian-born wrestler Tyson Smith, what is the 24th and final letter of the Greek alphabet?
Yeah, okay.
Do you know any... Do any of these clues help you out?
The watch brand does.
Yeah?
The watch brand does. And I think it's because a lot of pilots wear Omega watches.
Ah.
The rest of it wouldn't have known.
The fatty acids? Omega-3?
Oh.
Yeah.
Are you saying I'm right?
You are right, indeed.
Excellent.
And you're not a fan of Tyson Smith, the Canadian-born wrestler?
No.
I was trying to find Omega-related things and Tyson came to my rescue.
Nice.
It was good. Californian ghost town. The town no one's there. Omega, California.
Omega, California.
It kind of is fitting if it's the last letter.
It's
a bit of a last resort. Yeah, it's a bit of a last resort sort of town as well now.
Interesting.
Do you think that was intentional?
I don't know.
Probably not. All right, question two. Most of us know that in the context of dates and history, BC stands for before Christ and refers to the years before Jesus Christ is estimated to have been born. By the same token, what Latin phrase is represented by the letters AD?
I think it is Anno Domini. And I don't actually know what it means. Anno being year.
Mm-hmm.
Domini, when I think of Domini, I think like dominatrix.
Oh.
No. I think, well, Domini, I think like Sunday maybe, like rebirth, I think of. Because, you know, isn't Sunday the day that Jesus came back? Anno Domini is what I think it stands for. No idea what it means.
Actually means annual dominoes. It's the one visit to a pizza restaurant you're allowed if you grew up in our house. Yeah,
yeah.
No, it actually stands for the year of our Lord is what it means. But Anno Domini is, that's correct. That's the Latin phrase. So you know how sometimes you hear like old-timey American movies where they say the year of our Lord, 1920 or whatever. So that's the same thing. Anno Domini.
There you go. Yeah. Wow.
And it makes sense, right? The year of our Lord because like it's like after he's... Yeah. His thing.
I think as well, you know, Sunday year kind of makes sense. Like, but okay.
Yeah.
I think
my logic probably does well.
I still get the points, you know.
You definitely do. Well,
embarrass myself a little bit, but yeah, that's okay.
You're all good. Question three. It's a musical theatre question.
Great. Spectacular.
Get ready to crash land back to... No, you get it. You get it. At the 2004 Tony Awards, puppet-centric musical Avenue Q famously beat which blockbuster to claim best new musical?
You say blockbuster to refer to a film?
Oh, like it's just like Oh no, it's not based off a film, but no, it's just like a...
It's just...
Same thing, like it's just a very popular musical.
I'm going to rule out the Da Vinci musical funded by Naru.
Yeah, do you want to tell people, has this come up on the podcast?
I don't know, I think this might have been a pre-production episode where we discussed this.
Yeah.
The government of Naru essentially basically funded a lot of very unusual things with their earnings from phosphate resources.
Yeah.
Including the production of West End, so it wouldn't win a Tony, I guess, but West End musical Leonardo, about the life of Leonardo da Vinci, and apparently it was critically panned.
Do you think people went along and went, hang on, this isn't about Ninja Turtles at all. There's barely any Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, where's Donatello?
Yeah. It reminds me of the musical that Joey's in Friends about Sigmund Freud. That's exactly what, what would he have sung about da Vinci?
I don't know. You would have to ask the government of Nauru.
Do you think the Mona Lisa's a character and she comes to life and sings?
Oh my, and dances?
Yeah.
But
she's kind of like smiling, like a weird, weird little smile.
Avenue Q beat in 04.
Mm.
Another blockbuster musical. You know what came out, I reckon, around then? Wicked. I remember it in about 06 coming to Sydney, and it was already the Broadway sensation. Mm. I reckon Wicked's what I'm going to lock in.
That's correct, man. It is Wicked. So Wicked is currently still on Broadway. It's the fourth longest running Broadway show of all time, with nearly 8,000 performances completed since it opened in October 2003, as of April 2024 when we're recording this. Avenue Q is currently the 26th longest. It played between 2003 and 2009, but it did transfer off Broadway in 2009 and ran until 2019. So it was still very successful.
You saw it, didn't you?
I did see it off Broadway. Yeah, it was very good. But it was considered at the time more critically acclaimed. It wasn't actually that big of an upset. It was. We look back on it now and go, wow, how could Wicked not have won? It's one of the most famous musicals ever. But at the time, Avenue Q actually received more favourable critical reviews than Wicked did.
I can see that.
Both shows have obviously kind of gone on and
been pretty popular. Is it Stone and Parker, Avenue Q?
No, it's written by two guys, Robert Lopez and I think Jeff Marks is the other guy's name.
Okay.
And Robert Lopez went on to co-write The Book of Mormon with the South Park guys.
I thought there was a link,
Yeah, so, but it's very similar. If anyone doesn't know, it's a musical. It's almost like Sesame Street for adults in a way. It's puppets going and dealing with real world problems like racism and the internet. It's very funny, but it's got real people and puppets in it as well.
It's pretty cool.
It's some good songs in it as well. All right, question number four. You're going very well here. You're in 3 out of 3. Question four. Let's see if you can keep it up. In 1779, Benjamin Franklin published an essay entitled A Reformed Mode of Spelling, in which he proposed several changes to the alphabet that we know and love. Among Franklin's changes, he added 6 new letters, which included characters representing sh, m, v, and th, and proposed omitting 6 letters. Name 3 of the 6 letters that Franklin wanted to cut.
Wow. Okay, this kind of I'm Team Franklin on this one, I reckon.
Really?
We've got a few double ups. We don't need all of them.
That's basically was his logic, yeah.
I really hope that there's some kind of derpy cuts, like B and P become the same thing.
Look at that pear over there. It's going to attack you. It's just a pear. No, it's a grizzly pear.
Exactly, yeah. Or maybe I like the idea maybe that he wanted to make P and F the same, be like French prize.
It's me, Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, good point. He's not gonna change his name so it sounds dopey. Benjamin Franklin. Oh gosh. I reckon C's on the cut list for him.
Okay.
So how many guesses do I get?
I'll give you 4 guesses to name 3 letters.
C's on the cut list, I reckon. I don't think he's getting... Oh, he might be getting rid of U. Maybe replacing it with double O. U can go, I reckon. X can go.
What's X being replaced with, do you think?
S, probably.
Okay.
S or S-I. And I would say Z can go, but I feel like Americans love their Z. We'd get rid of it. But they like spelling emphasize with a Z.
Yeah.
Yanks love the Z. And I reckon...
So what have you got so far? C-X-U, did you say?
U, yeah. And I reckon Q could go. That could be a KW maybe. Yeah.
So you're getting points. 3 out of 4 of those were the letters that he wanted to cut. So... The letters that Benjamin Franklin wanted to get rid of were C, J, Q, W, X, and Y. I got to say, I did track down the actual essay. Didn't read all of it. sort of gave it a bit of a skim. But essentially, the crux of it was that these letters could be replaced with other letters. So, why do we have to have a C when S and K and make the two sounds that C does. You know, like circle, you can make that with an S.
Yeah.
And like cat, you make that with a K. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. How in between flying kites with keys attached to them and, you know, like declaring independence, did he have time to write an essay about the alphabet?
Yeah, so I will just say, Noah Webster, as in Webster's Dictionary, he was a fan. He was on board with the Franklin.
Really?
He tried to adopt it, but otherwise it didn't catch on. And some of the sources that I read actually said that other people ridiculed Franklin for the alphabet. They were like, walking up the street, like, oh, guys, look, here comes Benjamin. Well, where's your J, Ben? Well, where is it, mate?
Oh, geez.
Change your name.
That's a weird one to publicly post.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, the essay can be found online. It's, like I said, I can't call it a riveting read because I didn't read all of it, but I did skim through it.
Hey, bro, what are you reading? I'm just reading a Benjamin Franklin essay about how he wants to get rid of six letters of the alphabet and create six new ones.
Yeah, so it ends up as a 26-letter alphabet. And, like, there were some sentences written as examples. Like, drivel. It's so hard to follow. It's also, like, you can't, like, I don't know. He thought it would just put us all on the same page in terms of, like, phonetics. It'd just be easier. But also, I feel like we're just kind of used to the letters that we know.
Yeah, it'd probably be easier for people learning English as a second language.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Mm. All right, question 5, the last one in alphabet soup.
Mm.
Which common song, known for a nonsensical refrain that features 3 different letters in a pattern, is thought to trace back to a piece of music from Thomas d'Urfé's 1706 opera, The Kingdom of the Birds? The song as we currently know it tells of an elderly agronomist and his menagerie.
Yeah, I think I know.
Do you know any songs about elderly agronomists and their menagerie?
Yeah, I think it's Old MacDonald Had a Farm, perhaps. E-I-E-I-O?
Those are famously letters, and it is Old MacDonald Had a Farm. So, correct, like, the opera The Kingdom of the Birds has a song. I forget what it is. I think it's called, like, Through the Fields of Ice and Snow or something. And, like, you listen to it, and, like, you can just hear, like, the vague semblance of Old MacDonald Had a Farm wanting to break free. And it kind of, its lyrics were, like, following a similar, it was about sort of, like, it's, like, a bit more solemn, but it's kind of, like,
yeah.
Fie, on the range, there was ein bird. Like, it's, not, yeah, yeah, those aren't the words, but it's that kind of vibe. I did a lot of research into Old MacDonald Had a Farm for this question. The song's been translated into multiple other languages and modified slightly, sort of, because it rhymes and it's a rhyme in a language. So some of my favourite translations are Little Wolf Had a Place in Portuguese.
Mm.
It's Nice on the Farm in Slovenian, which actually this one, according to Wikipedia, sometimes gets changed to be a bit rude and becomes a drinking song, which I kind of like.
Awesome.
And my personal favourite is Kind Old Man in Persian. Can I read to you some of the lyrics of Kind Old Man? So I tracked down the lyrics and put them into Google Translate. There was a lot. So I've had to cut it down to this is my favourite verse. Ready? This fowl, behold, how cute. The old man is for him. It sprinkles cumin. He eats coriander. Lays eggs. It tickles. That chicken, it has a golden crown.
Wow.
Also, the old man, a bit controversial. Coriander.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not a big
tastes like soap, old man.
Yeah.
There's also one in the first verse where Kind Old Man had a black eye. So, for a man who's reputedly quite kind, I don't know how he got that. So, that was kind of interesting to read about Kind Old Man.
It's kind of funny when new languages adopt the music, like the melody of something to create their own words. What's Happy Birthday in French? What do you say?
Joyeux anniversaire, I think. I forget what it is.
Yeah, well, Italian, they say Tanti auguri, which is... many congratulations.
Oh, okay.
And, like, I don't know if it's as a... Like, you could say happy birthday, obviously. You could directly translate it, but it would be a really unusual phrase in general in Italian. They sing, many congratulations to you. Many congratulations to you.
Yeah. Well, Kind Old Man is literally the exact same tune as... Yeah, I found a video, actually. I was at home. I think my Google search is going to be completely out of whack now. It's going to be like, oh, he wants Persian children's songs. Coming right up. So, at the end of round 2, you've actually done a... clean sweep of alphabet soup.
5.
5 points to go with 2 from earlier on. So let's just Wayne, the new producer. Let's see how many. Okay, so we've crunched the numbers and I'm on 5 points, Harley, and you're on 7 heading into round number 3.
Excellent.
Round 3. So round number three, Harley, remind us what I'm hearing questions about in round three.
You are hearing about Drop It.
Fantastic.
Launching right in, The College Dropout is the debut album of which American rapper? And I must say, I'm kind of surprised it was not in the top 30 albums.
Yeah, well, one of his other albums was, I think.
Okay, who is it?
I think it was Ye, as he prefers to be called. Otherwise known as Kanye West.
I was going...
Was it Ye or Ye?
I'm not sure, but I was going to not give you the points.
Oh, really?
No.
She's old enough.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely correct. And the fact that I've written is, the title refers to him dropping out of college.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's pretty... It does work on multiple levels, though.
Yeah. If you think about it. It's a great album, though.
Is it?
It is one of few albums that, if I'm driving, I'll put on and listen from one end to the other.
Does it have Neighbours in Paris on it?
No, it doesn't. No, that's from Watch the Throne, which is his collective album with Jay-Z.
Yeah. You can't say the other N-word, so just say Neighbours.
Yeah. How about you bleep that word like you've actually said it?
Oh, no. I'm not saying Neighbours on the podcast. Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Base jumping. Are you familiar with it?
No, I am familiar.
It refers to parachuting from a fixed object.
Oh, no, I see where this is going.
What?
No, okay.
Base is an acronym. You know that?
Yeah.
What does the B stand for?
Oh, okay.
A is antennae, S is spans, meaning bridges, and E is earth. What's the B?
I think it's one of two things. It's either buildings or bridges. Oh, I know, but you just said spans is bridges.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's like buildings. How do you jump from an antenna, by the way? It's very narrow. Like, unless like you're like...
If B was bridges, it would be babe jumping. How do you jump from an antenna? It doesn't mean like a TV antenna on top of your house.
Yeah, but like what kind of antenna is it? Because all antennas by definition are quite like...
No, it's like skinny. It's like a mobile tower.
Yeah, but it's... I guess, yeah.
You know, the ones that look like the Eiffel Tower?
Still a building though, isn't it, kind of?
I don't think
really. It's been built.
Mm.
Yeah. I feel like we're stalling. I think it is actually buildings. Mm. So that's what I was afraid you were gonna get me to name the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Definitely could not have done. So I'm gonna guess buildings.
Absolutely correct. It is buildings. It's not bridges. It's not babe jumping.
Yep.
And for my fun fact for that, I thought I'd tell you about a friend who I can't legally name for ongoing court things at the moment.
Wow.
Who actually in the early days of base jumping, he has long been a base jumper.
Yeah.
He's probably in his late 40s, early 50s now. Actually climbed the Harbour Bridge and base jumped off it. Got away with it.
Wow.
In like a group of people. And like there were newspaper articles at the time. I think it was about the 90s. Like who are these people that Harbour Bridge base jumped? He is now facing charges for completely unrelated things.
Yeah.
Not to do with illegally spanning spans.
Harley's mate. Harvey, who's since become a film producer and is, well, we said too much. Let's give it too much.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so wait, he just jumped off a...
Yeah, him and a bunch of mates.
Did the press call him something? Or did they have like a...
I don't know. I haven't...
The jumping five or something?
So people have jumped off it since. Someone actually got injured very badly very jumping high. Off it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have a parachute though. But
oh, yeah, true.
He, I couldn't find any like Wayback Machine articles about it, but it was... I have since found, pertaining to other criminal charges he's faced, local news articles about him that have said he is rumoured to have jumped off it.
Wow.
But yeah, like, if he wasn't currently facing certain charges, I would probably be able to name him by name, but no.
Sure. Wait, did your friend, can I have another guess? Did they make a certain luncheon that featured some mushrooms, perhaps?
No. wasn't. And he also wasn't a police officer that pulled his gun for threatening to spoil Top Gun Maverick as well.
That lives rent-free in my head. Like, I'm glad that I managed to get into a question. That's truly ludicrous that happened.
No, yep. Anyway, moving on. Two from two. You're batting pretty well here.
I need to be.
The tune, basically, of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Mm.
Was originally written for a 1969 film by which American songwriter, pianist, and composer whose career spanned from the 50s to the 2020s? I must say, when I think of this person, I think of love songs.
Well, I was wondering if you were going to ask me what movie, and I think it was written for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was the movie.
Yes.
Till the 2020s. Okay, that makes me think this is someone that's died recently, potentially. I know that Tony Bennett died recently. When did Burt Bacharach die? He wrote, like, I think, What Do You Get When You Fall In Love? And, like, Always Something There To Remind Me, I think he wrote. I'm going to say Bertley Bacharach.
It's actually Burt Bacharach, sorry. No, you're absolutely correct. It's Burt Bacharach. And double correct, it's for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which we learnt Steve McQueen didn't appear in earlier in the episode. The song actually won an Oscar for Best Original Song.
I can believe that. A lot of the songs that have won the one though that award early on are ones that we probably don't even think of as being from a movie.
And Burt Bacharach doubled up for his whole score of the movie, winning another Oscar.
Jeez, it was a good day for Burt. Less good for his Audi equivalent, Bertley.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Batting perfect still, 3 from 3. And we got a sports question coming up.
Pressure's on.
Jumping Joe Savoldi and Abe, Hebrew Hercules Coleman, are credited with creating the basic dropkick maneuver as used in what sport? Jumping Joe Savoldi and Hebrew Hercules Coleman.
Hebrew Hercules Coleman.
Competed in what sport, basically?
Okay, so my first thing was Coleman, like Coleman metal dropkick, like AFL, but it's not. I think it's John Coleman.
Hebrew Hercules. In the AFL, like 50 years ago, people had names like Hebrew Hercules.
They sound like they're members of like a 50s gang, like, hey, where's Jumpin' Joe and Hebrew Hercules? We gotta go down the milk van, pronto.
Yeah, well, I mean, these people would have been tough guys in their day, but they're not very tough sounding names.
With a name like Hebrew Hercules, you have to be tough to pull that off. I don't actually know. I think, I mean, drop kicks. I'm thinking rugby. But
If I were you, I'd focus on the stage name element of this.
Oh.
They're competing names, yeah?
Perhaps they're wrestlers. I'm going to say that Hebrew Hercules and Jumpin' Joe were... Wait, so they kicked people. Like, they got another wrestler and drop kicked them into the audience. I'm going to say wrestling.
Yes, but that's not the way that you drop kick someone. You kind of, like, jump from a running position with your heels out and, like... launch yourself into someone to perform a dropkick, basically.
That sounds very painful.
Yeah, Hebrew Hercules from Jumping Joe Savoldi, both in very early professional wrestling clips, have been seen doing what is now called a dropkick.
Fantastic.
4 from 4 so far.
Oof.
Final question for the round. You're a bit of an alcoholic, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely.
No. A lemon drop cocktail uses what two alcohols in its mixing?
Lemon drop?
A lemon drop, okay. Yeah.
Thinking maybe limoncello could be one. I'm going to say whiskey and limoncello. Well, where am I?
Okay, I'll let you go again, even though you waited for me to have a big breath through like the gapped sides of my mouth. I'll let you have another two.
Wait for you to look disappointed to change my answer. Well, it's lemon. I guess a lemon could be not alcoholic. That could be like lemonade or something, or like lemon juice.
Yeah.
Yeah, what goes with lemon juice? Whiskey. And I'm going to say whiskey and vermouth, because I don't know what vermouth is, and I'm too old to ask at this point. 26, I should probably know what that is. Sounds like Vermont, and I get them confused. So I'm going to say vermouth and whiskey.
I can't give you the points for that, because you're very wrong. It is vodka.
Okay.
Specifically lemon or citron vodka, if you have it.
Yeah.
And triple sec.
What's triple sec? Another one that I'm afraid to ask and now I have.
Triple sec's like Cointreau.
Oh, okay.
Like it's like an orangey citrusy liqueur.
Oh.
That and then lemon juice. And
sounds
it's
pretty good.
Poured in a martini glass.
What'd you call it? Lemon drop.
A lemon drop, yeah.
In a martini. Sounds pretty classy.
Yeah. Well, if I wasn't going to work next, we could go get ourselves a lemon drop at 11:45 in the morning.
The Great Southern Hotel downstairs. It's a classy establishment.
It is. Yeah.
Go ask them, yeah.
Probably serving lemon drops.
Fantastic. So
4 from 5 for the round.
So that means that I've ended up on 9 at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Harley, you've got to get to win the game. You're on 7. And I believe 9 minus 7 equals 2.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to get 3 to win the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic. So you're hearing questions in noteworthy. So for this one... I've done some questions that are about noteworthy things, and I've done some things that are just about some questions that are just about notes.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna have to contend with a lot here, a lot of different things.
Sounds good.
Question 1: most Australians will remember the second series of polymer banknotes that were in circulation between 1992 and 2016,
yep.
Which featured likenesses of iconic Australians on each side.
Uh-huh.
Each note from $10 to $100 had the same two people throughout the entire run.
Mm.
Which has carried on to the new banknotes released in 2016. You with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
But a limited edition press of the $5 note in 2001 featured which two Australians in place of Queen Elizabeth II and an image of Parliament House? One of the people was a politician who lends his name to a Western New South Wales town, while the second was a Scottish-born feminist and journalist who died in 1910.
Wow.
Can you picture this $5 note?
I can picture the old school $5 note that, but I think we're talking about different $5 notes here.
I'm thinking it looks exactly like the one, the pink one that you know and love with the Queen.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's got two different people and randomly.
The dude's got a beard and long hair.
Mm.
I got tipped with one of those $5 notes in about 2018, 2019. Yeah. And it was crisp as hell. The person said, yeah, I just found it in like a drawer that I hadn't looked in for ages. And I put it in a book to keep flat somewhere. And I don't know what book it is.
Yeah.
I've got one of these like in perfect condition sitting around. But these like were uncommon by the time I could remember holding money.
Very uncommon. I can picture it before I write this question. I can picture one side of it, but not the other.
I can picture the male side because it looks kind of like Dumbledore.
He so does,
I'm
going
to lock in Dumbledore.
famous Australian politician. Elvis Dumbledore.
Western New South Wales town.
Is named after this person.
Named after this town.
I think try and zero in on this person. I think the other person perhaps like... Might not get.
Do I have to get first and last name or can I just say the town? And
you can say the town. I'll pay that. John Wagga Wagga.
Well, who played Dumbledore?
Michael Gambon and before that, Richard Harris.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that either of them are going to help.
Yeah, well...
They're not Australian.
Who plays Uncle Vernon?
Richard Griffiths.
I'm going to guess Griffiths.
Okay, well, so not only have you guessed a Harry Potter character, it wasn't even a Harry Potter character that you said this guy looked like, so I don't know how you managed that. It's actually Henry Parks on one side. And Catherine Helen Spence on the other side. So, Henry Parks is a prominent politician, often referred to as the, quote, father of Federation. Mm-hmm. And these banknotes were released to commemorate Federation. And then on the other side was Catherine Helen Spence, who led the way for women's rights in Australia. So, in the 19th century. So,
there you go. Look, Henry Parks is a name that I know.
Mm.
I wasn't expecting to know the name at all.
You've been to Parks, haven't you?
In the last 2 weeks, I've been to Parks, yeah. Just the airport, but I've been to the dish as well.
Yeah.
It was my phone lock radio screen dish for a while. Me and my friend Iman standing in the front of the dish.
Yeah, I thought you'd been to the... I thought you had quite a nice time in Parks.
I had a lovely time in Parks.
Next time you go, think of Henry.
Yeah.
Would you please?
I will.
Thank you. All right, question two.
I might even be in Parks in the next 2 weeks. I haven't checked my roster. Anyway.
Question two. Production of which 2004 film famously ran into trouble when lead actors Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams clashed to the point that Gosling attempted to have his female co-star replaced. Remember, this is noteworthy.
Noteworthy.
A movie.
Yeah. Could it be... I don't really know any noteworthy movies, to be honest, but I know The Notebook, but I don't know actually when it came out. I thought it was a fair bit newer than that, but I got nothing better than The Notebook.
Well, there is nothing better than The Notebook, Harley, if you want to have a good old cry. That's correct. Director Nick Cassavetes brought the pair into the room to air their grievances, which were resolved to the point that they actually dated between 2005 and 2007.
Wow.
So, I've never seen The Notebook, have you?
No, I haven't either.
It's about some kind of sad notebook, I understand.
Oh, I'm looking up who Rachel McAdams is. I didn't realize she had...
Regina George.
...starred in films that aren't comedies.
Yeah. She's in Mean Girls, that's the main thing I know her from.
There you go, yeah.
Fantastic. So, Harley, question number three.
Yep.
A piano is a musical instrument that can play lots of different notes.
Okay.
But within five, how many keys are there on a standard piano?
On a standard piano?
Yeah. Not on a guitar.
Not on a guitar.
Not interested in that.
Yeah. Or a piano accordion.
No.
I'm going to go. Nice round number. I reckon it's over 100.
Okay.
I reckon it's under 150. I reckon it's over 150.
It's over zero. I'll give you that. That's a hint.
And it's below a billion.
Yeah. So it gives you a bit of a rough said too much, to be honest.
But. Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, guessing a number between them gives me a 1 in 200 million chance. That's a way to think about it. What are the odds? I'm going to go 543 million. No, I'm going to guess 120.
You're not that close, I'll be honest. But, it's actually 88.
88.
Yeah, so it's, I guess, 11 octaves, right? I don't know if it's exact, but...
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think of the whole octave. No, no, but...
8 times 11 is 88.
88 white keys, that would be.
No, 88 keys. Oh, yeah. Oh, true. Yeah, yeah, sorry. So it's not... Yeah, you're right. It's not, because there's semitones. Yeah. 8, it would be. Yeah.
Mm, anyway. I don't know. I think you better do some fact-checking there, Jasper. It's
definitely 88. Okay. Because it was like 50-something white. And then, yeah.
I'm going to Google this.
Okay.
How many keys on a piano? Yeah, I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Okay. Okay, question number 4. So to win the game, you need to get both of these right, these next two questions. Question 4. Only 8 people have ever been made honorary citizens of the United States of America, including Mother Teresa, revolutionary hero Marquis de Lafayette, and William Penn, the English writer who founded the province of Pennsylvania. But in 1963, less than 2 years before he died, which Englishman became the first person to receive the honour of being an honorary citizen?
I thought you just said Penn was an Englishman who got it.
No, it's not him, though. It's another one. It's more than one Englishman out there.
Didn't you say he was the only... Didn't you just say that...
No, he was the first one to get it.
The first Englishman?
No, he was an Englishman. No, but the William Penn guy didn't get it, like, in, like, the 1700s. He got it later.
Oh, the first one to get it while alive.
No, he's just the first one to get it, full stop.
Oh, and all these other people got it posthumously.
Yeah, correct.
Posthumously.
Yeah, correct. It's posthumously. So, it's like spectroscopy.
Mass spectroscopy. Yeah, I think I know who this is. I think it might be Winston.
Winston Noodles.
I think it might be Winston Churchill or... Winnie Blues, as he was called.
Winston with a Y?
Yeah, I think it's Winston Churchill.
When it comes to Iron Curtains, it's Winston. Winston with a Y. That's correct. It is Winston Churchill. Well done. Question 5. This is to win the game noteworthy.
How do we always end up here?
Yeah. So, well, last week we thought we ended up here, and it turns out Shelley, the producer, got it wrong. And now she's outside playing... You know...
What sounds like Old MacDonald had a farm.
Yeah.
If you're from Persia... The nice old man.
Kind old man, yeah. I can hear her right now. I can hear her tooting, melodically wafting into the apartment. As we read question 5, this is written by my girlfriend, Nu, who is an ardent listener of this show. I couldn't think of anything in noteworthy, and she thought of this. Name any of the 3 celebrities who appear in a noteworthy selfie taken by friend of the show, Ellen DeGeneres, at the 2014 Academy Awards.
How many do I need to name?
Name 3.
3. I think Hugh Jackman's in it.
I'll give you 4 guesses again.
Okay, I think Hugh Jackman's in it. I like this 4 guesses thing.
4 guesses for 3 answers.
I think that should become...
You do like it, because...
Yeah. I'm doing well.
Yeah, because I've gotten one wrong, but the other 3 have been right on the other 2 occasions we've done that today.
Okay, so Hugh Jackman.
Okay.
But it also might be Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, okay.
It's one or the other.
You're just going to guess both?
I'm just going to guess both.
Okay.
Which means I need to get the rest of them perfect. Meryl Streep.
Okay.
Wait, where was it taken at the Oscars?
2014 Academy Awards.
What was Ellen DeGeneres doing at the Oscars?
Oh, she's had a free night in the calendar, wanted to pop along, have some canapes, and read the complimentary newspaper.
I think Will.i.am might be in that selfie as well, which is another person. What are they doing at the Oscars?
Well, are you sure he was at the Oscars? Or am I just messing with you?
Maybe you are messing with me. I reckon Will.i.am's in that photo. It's either Bradley Cooper or Hugh Jackman. Just for safe guessing, I'm going to put both of them down. I hope it's one of them.
So,
and then Meryl Streep, I reckon.
So you're locking those answers in?
Yeah, because I from memory, it was a veritable smorgasbord of celebrities.
Oh, it was smorgy as, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're locking those in.
Those in. You're looking at me like I've got none right.
I'm just concerned about why you didn't guess Ellen DeGeneres would be in an Ellen DeGeneres selfie.
I thought we concluded that she was in it. I didn't realize that was fair game.
Well, because, okay...
Yeah. I haven't gotten the points.
No, you haven't, because you're right that either Bradley Cooper or Hugh Jackman is in it. Bradley Cooper is in it.
Not Hugh Jackman.
Meryl Streep is in it.
Yep.
Will.i.am is not in it.
No? Okay. Was Ellen, he there that night?
Probably. Everyone was there. I was there. What were you doing? 2014 Oscars. So the people that were in it, there are in total, I think 12. Let me count. Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, Julia Roberts, Lupita Nyong'o's brother Junior, Jack is way in, Channing Tatum, Kevin Spacey, and a barely visible Jared Leto, as well as Ellen DeGeneres herself. DeGeneres, sorry, I kept doing that. The selfie had garnered more than 2 million retweets by the end of the Oscar ceremony.
Yeah.
So
that selfie is very different to what I remember it looking like.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that you can't really... You can picture... Like, I don't know. I personally can picture Ellen DeGeneres at the front and yep. Bradley Cooper on the side.
I can picture Meryl Streep there. Like yeah. That, yeah. Wow. See, they're just actors. And Ellen. Like, I thought they were like singers and like athletes. Where's Channing Tatum in this?
He's kind of like peeking over, making a derpy face.
Doesn't look like Channing Tatum at all. Yeah, wow.
It is him, though. I called him to check and fact check.
Yeah, that's a lot more boring than I remember it being. I could have sworn they were like singers and athletes and stuff in it as well.
So, I've just crunched the number. Or Wayne has just handed me a piece of paper that says that you actually haven't named all those, but Wayne's just telling me that maybe you should be given a half point for naming 2 out of 3.
Nah.
Well, we don't have a tiebreaker question, and the episode's got to go out tomorrow, so I feel like...
Default.
By the default. Sweetest. I think that means that you've garnered half a point for that, which means, controversially...
too controversial it actually, in a row.
To be honest, does make me think that there is still... a bit of a controversial ploy to dethrone me as one of the hosts on this show.
It's because I don't insist on being called Mr. Bruce when the cameras aren't rolling.
Well, Wayne's only just gotten here, and you know he's actually wearing a shirt that says Mr. Bruce. It's a bit much, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks like, Harley, today you are, once again, the trivia champ.
Harley, you are the champ. Jasper, you are the chum.
So thanks for listening to another episode of Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. That was our second last episode for this, the first season. If you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. TriviaChamp, TriviaChump at gmail.com or at TriviaChamp or TriviaChump on Instagram. Harley, is there anything you'd like to say to close out today's episode?
I'd like to say to close out that I've always relied on the kindness of listeners. Was that like close enough?
That's kind of close. Yeah, let's.
That's the streetcar named Desire, isn't it? It
absolutely is. Well done. That'll do from us. And
that's enough trivia.
And we'll see you next week.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.